Good evening and welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM. Mark Levine and Garland Nixon are here. And Mark, I don't think we should sing. What do you think? I mean, there was some great singing on the last show.
They don't want us to sing. I think there's a fatwa against us singing at the station.
Yeah, they'll be,
which is best for everyone if we just talk.
Yeah, they'll be invading this. They'll be outside with pitchforks and torches.
Right,
going through
right.
We don't want that. Well, at any rate, people might not even know who we are, which by the time they finish listening to the show might not necessarily be that bad of a thing. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine.
The name of the show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on 89.3 FM WPFW. And we talk about all kinds of interesting things in the news and the views part. Of course, you're going to hear Mark and I, but the views part are your views.
That's right. And I have an announcement that I want to make. For those who like to listen to me in the afternoon as you drive home on News Views,
yep.
You'll be able to listen to me in the morning as well, starting this Wednesday from 6 to 8 a.m. as you drive to work. I've got a new show. We don't even have the name for it yet, but I will be there giving my news and my views, and I encourage you to start tuning in Wednesday morning. Yeah, I know people listen to WPFW as they drive home from work. Now they can listen as they drive to work.
Yeah, they can listen to you on Wednesday, 6 to 8.
Starting this Wednesday.
Yeah, 6 to 8 a.m.
Yep.
You'll be here bright and early. And I'll be out and about. Well, Mark, I don't leave the gym till about 7. I get in there early. So from 7 to 8, I'll be listening.
Okay, fair enough.
At any rate, we got plenty to talk about.
Yes,
you know, I'm not going to get into Chris Christie right now.
It's always fun.
Although I must say, he's in a world deep in serious trouble. I'll just mention that since it is news and this is News Views, I will mention that.
And not to brag or anything, but I predicted, I believe right here on News Views, that this was the end of Chris Christie back when this stuff first came out, because it was obvious to me he had to know that this kind of thing can't happen without him either knowing or at least setting up a culture that knew it. So I'm not surprised by this news.
We won't do a couple minutes on this, but it is important too, since it's news that just came out today. David Wildstein, who was his man over there at the Port Authority, has rolled over on him, shall we say. Basically, his lawyer released a statement saying that Chris Christie has denied that he knew that the lane closure was going on, but that David Wildstein it says he did.
How could he not know? It existed for 4 days. It was a big news story.
Yeah.
It affects New Jersey. There were thousands of angry calls from
it's
Fort
not like
Lee.
He's the governor of New Jersey.
I mean, you know, I heard about it,
right.
And I'm not the governor of New Jersey,
right.
But I remember when it happened, you would think the governor had heard about it.
Yeah, but then again, you're not accused of corruption either.
That is true.
That might have something to do with why you heard about it and he didn't.
That is true.
But at any rate, so his guy over the Port Authority, the first man who was tossed out, the first body under the bus, how about that? Has said that Chris Christie knew and that he has proof.
Uh-oh.
He said he can prove.
Ruh-roh. Now, what Scooby-Doo used to say.
And here's something to understand about what's going on, Mark, and you would get this. When Wildstein was canned, resigned, etc., the Port Authority said, we're not paying for your attorney. And, you know, what happens oftentimes with state or federal employees, if you're involved in something in the course of your normal course of your duties and
right.
you are facing prosecution or whatever the case may be, lawsuits, then they will cover the attorney fees. But if they say
you haven't done anything wrong,
right.
they
right.
usually cover your attorney
yeah,
fees.
Yeah, it's generally –
a lot of times
right.
when you have done something wrong – I'll just give you the former governor of Virginia,
right.
Bob McDonnell. Ken Cuccinelli, when he was in power as attorney general, paid Bob McDonnell's attorney's fees. One of the first things that Terry McAuliffe and Mark Herring did in Virginia was cancel that very, very lucrative contract for McDonnell's attorney. So when – sometimes they pay and sometimes they don't. And the more they're in trouble, the less likely they are to pay.
Right. And so one of the things that's going on now is I'm sure Wildstein's concerned with that. And his part of this letter that he put out is asking the Port Authority to reconsider not paying, whether or not they will pay his attorney fees. I'm sure his attorney was all for that.
I'm sure.
But the long and short of it is
expensive.
I think he's going to argue – I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything legal, and I was doing what I was told, and it was in the normal course of my duties.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have nothing to lose by making that argument, but Chris Christie clearly has a lot to lose. So that should turn out well. And I may say this. I'll add that if anybody looks on my Facebook page, you'll see. I actually put out on my Facebook page, I put a little question. I said, Chris Christie's in trouble. Do you think he'll get out of it? Do you think he'll go to jail? What's your opinion? And I put, I think he'll end up in jail. That's what I put.
You know, I don't think he'll end up in jail, but I do think he will. This will irrevocably damage his presidential campaign.
I think
because I don't know that it was illegal what he did. It was just a really, really bad, unethical thing to do.
I think there were some things done that were illegal. Remember, keep in mind,
cover up or you're actually closing the bridge.
You're actually doing that. I mean, you've got laws such as misuse of state property. Well, I work for the state.
Yeah.
Every law is going to have misuse of state property. If you tell a state employee, such as a bunch of people that work on a bridge, to go do a bunch of things, remember, you're paying these people a salary.
Yeah.
This is state money.
But I wonder whether that's civil, whether it actually rises to the level of criminal.
There are laws. Yeah, you can be charged. You
all
can
right.
be charged
right,
in
we'll
most
see.
States. In Maryland, I know you can.
See.
Misuse of state property, you can get a lot of trouble. So at any rate, I'm pretty sure there's going to be, you know, malfeasance in office.
I want to hear what Bridget, I forgot her last name.
What about this, Mark?
The woman he fired.
How about this? This would be criminal. Reckless endangerment.
Well, we
you
do know a woman
point.
Died. I mean,
right.
there was a 90-something-year-old woman who suffered cardiac arrest because they couldn't get her to the hospital.
Right, and we do know that there were people who EMS, Emergency Medical Services, had issues with being able to respond to various calls.
Yeah, there
and
were about
that
three
any,
people.
A reasonable and prudent person, to use legal language,
mm-hmm.
could easily predict that that would happen.
That's true.
So that's not right.
No. I just because you know, criminal, it has to be under reasonable doubt. It's a much tougher standard than civil.
Right.
But listen, at the very least, it could lead to its impeachment.
Right. Yeah. Reckless is you have to a reasonable person would have to assume that lives would be endangered. You know, negligence isn't necessarily lives.
Yeah, and you know, and the woman,
its
family says that she was 90 something, yeah. would have died anyway. So,
but the question is not whether or not somebody died with reckless endangerment. It's whether or not you recklessly placed people's lives in danger.
Whether or not
and you should
died.
Have known that somebody's life would be in danger. You know, if I point a gun to you and we're supposedly playing Russian roulette and I pull the trigger and it clicks, that's still reckless endangerment.
Yeah, I don't want to play that game, Drone. I've told you time and time again, no Russian roulette. I'll play poker. I'll play bridge.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I know you like the game. I'm not playing with you. I'm telling you.
But it's a Derringer, and it only holds one round. So I think we can pretty much predict the outcome of that. At any rate, so I just wanted to say. Speaking of which, to my left and Mark's right is Bill Witherspoon. And I got to pay my props.
We like him because he laughs at our jokes.
Yeah.
We like him.
He laughs at
and
our
works
jokes.
Very hard behind the scenes.
And he keeps us on the air. Because, Mark, let's demonstrate what would happen, what everybody would hear if Bill Witherspoon weren't doing his job. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah.
We got bigger things to talk about, Mark.
We do.
Income inequality.
Bigger than, never mind, I'm not going to say it.
You're right. We've got bigger things than Chris Christie. And that's a tall.
That's what I stopped. That's what I, yeah. that's what I didn't
yeah, I
say.
Saw, yeah.
That's
I was inspired
I
by the button.
I know. I stopped. Just for the record, I stopped myself. I did not say that. I just want
yeah,
to be very clear about
we've
that.
We've got bigger things than Chris Christie, and that's a tall order. Okay. Kristallnacht. Mark.
Oh, my God.
For starters.
You need to work on your segues.
Tell us. How you get through. But at any rate, Mark, tell our listeners, for starters, before we get into what we're going to say about Kristallnacht.
Okay, well, Kristallnacht was, I believe it was November 1st, 1938, some call it the Night of the Long Knives. In Nazi Germany, they mobs sent by the Nazi government broke all the Jewish stores, destroyed all the shop front windows. That's why they call it Kristallnacht, Night of Glass, Night of Broken Glass. And then they basically dragged Jews away and to death camps or jail or wherever. And it's sort of, most people think of it as sort of the beginning of the Holocaust.
Right. Well, being a Jewish person, I'm sure that you can identify with Tom Perkins, this multi-millionaire.
Well, why don't you tell people?
At least he identifies himself with you. How about that?
Yeah. Thank you.
He's a
no,
very, very, very wealthy man. And I can.
He's a venture capitalist. Yeah. He has a 360-degree view of San Francisco.
Yeah.
I guess
and
he's
he
got
had
the
like
tallest penthouse in San
Francisco. I've been seeing on. But at any rate, so he was complaining
mm-hmm.
About the persecution of the top 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And he likened it to Kristallnacht. And he said that rich Americans are being persecuted like Jews in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it's
31 Jews were killed, 30,000 arrested. Their homes were burned. Their stores were burned and looted.
That's right.
Many of them were killed, dragged in, beaten, everything. And this guy is sitting on a mountain, a hill, looking out.
Penthouse.
Yeah, you know, sitting there, you know, with his servants serving him, you know, wine and grapes. And he's got it just as bad as these people who, the ones that survived, were mostly thrown in, you know, in detention camps and
right.
either used as slaves or killed. But they don't have it any worse than he has it.
Yeah, poor billionaire. Oh, how my, you know, how my tears fall for someone who might only have, what, $2 billion instead of $2.1 billion due to, I mean, Obama's taxes aren't even as high as Bill Clinton's, frankly, when our economy was much stronger. It's to hear over-the-top rhetoric like that, it obviously just makes him look really silly. And you know, he can leave. If he doesn't like the United States, then I advise him to leave this country and form his own little island and get his own little police force. He probably can. Go buy an island somewhere.
Speaking of income inequality, we're going to talk about it a little bit more. A new study says that the world's 85, count them, Mark, 85 richest people have as much wealth as the 3.5 billion poorest people.
Right, half of the global population,
according to Oxfam. The wealth of the world's richest 1% amounts to $110 trillion, 65 times the total for the global – 65 times the total for the global bottom half. Not only do they have as much – it sounds like to me they got 65 times more. 7 out of 10 people worldwide live in countries where inequality has grown over the last 3 decades. So what we're looking at, a couple things.
And just to be fair, you're talking about global wealth. The United States ranks something like 72nd or 73rd. I think we're up there with Jamaica and Uzbekistan or something for income inequality. Virtually every civilized nation that we know of, rich industrial Western nation, you name it, from Canada
yep.
to England, France, Germany, Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, they all have more equality than,
let me see,
than we
what do.
What
do they all have in common? Let me see. Universal health care.
That's true. They all have universal health care.
You know, while the right in our country maligns the socialists of you ever notice they talk about, we don't want to be like these socialist countries in Europe, you know, they talk about
I don't think Canada is that different from
no.
us. People France, all right, is a much more different country from us, but Canada, Australia, New Zealand, these countries aren't that different from us.
Well, not to mention the fact is this, maybe they're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Maybe
I mean, if we look at our country and we say there's less inequality in those countries, they have a better social safety net.
They live longer than we do
because
they don't have – and they don't go bankrupt when they have health needs.
And they're not as fat as we are.
No, that's true.
They're healthier. If you say that inequality is broader here,
I don't know. There are probably some fat Canadians out there.
France.
The mayor of Toronto
is
not thin.
Yeah. that's
you'd think with all that crack, he would lose some weight, Ford, but apparently not.
No. But at any rate, so the issue of inequality is kind of unique in America in that, you know, we've kind of fallen behind everyone, and it's due to our, you know, our primitive way of looking at our economic model. You know, it's looking at this free market model like it's some kind of a religion, and the free market is the god that we must worship, and we must sacrifice our workers to this god.
We have the most income inequality since 1928.
Well,
now,
you
may recall what happened in 1929 when the stock market collapsed leading to the Great Depression. We have the most income inequality.
No.
The 1928, that's, you know, the Charleston and the Flappers and Great Gatsby and those very rich parties in New York while everyone else was suffering. That's where we are now. And
they had 3 Republican presidents in a row,
That is, absolutely correct. That is true.
Yep.
Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover.
Yep.
At that time.
3 straight Republican. And there were a lot of similarities and pretty much. But what we've done since Reagan is we have moved on a rightward, on a very conservative track, particularly with our economic policy.
Here's the thing.
Laissez-faire politics was what they used back then, and now we call it deregulation.
The free market has never been unregulated. To the extent that it's it was most unregulated would probably be the 1890s, when there was actually worse income inequality than today, as hard as that is to imagine.
Right.
When you had a few people like Andrew Carnegie or J.P. Morgan or
the
Rockefellers.
The robber barons.
Basically had virtually all of the nation's wealth. So much so we didn't have a Federal Reserve at that time that when we had the panic of 1893 and 1906, they had to take the money from the rich people just because it was the only money that was around.
Yep.
That's the way the country was. And what people don't seem to understand is that even Adam Smith, he's the person who wrote The Wealth of Nations. He's, many people think, the father of laissez-faire, free market.
Yeah, the Republicans, love Adam Smith.
But if they read Adam Smith, they would see that Adam Smith believed you needed a strong government to regulate the excesses, because he understood that if you have monopolies, and what is health care if not a monopoly? It's not like buying a piece of chewing gum. If you're sick and you need health care, you can't really say, you know what, ambulance, I've decided not to go to the hospital to deal with the fact that I'm bleeding and dying. I choose not to. It's too expensive. You don't have that option. But Adam Smith wrote very clearly that you need government regulation, particularly over monopolies. We don't have a free market, and what the Republicans support is not a free market.
Right.
They call it a free market. They're really supporting crony capitalism. They're supporting corporate welfare.
Yep.
They're supporting government helping monopolies. They're supporting government not regulating companies like Freedom Industries in West Virginia that are dumping chemicals into the last clean river in West Virginia. And then the corporation declares bankruptcy, so it doesn't have to pay anybody back for that. That is the America that the Republicans support. It is not a free market, and I don't want them to keep using that word, because it's simply not. It is crony capitalism.
That's it. It is a highly manipulated market.
That's right.
And it hasn't been free. And so the issue of inequality today is basically, as a country, you know, to a large extent, we, and I say we overall as a country, have brought it on ourselves by allowing our government to stray to, you know, laissez-faire politics, deregulation, whatever you want to call it right now, to allow them to back off the big corporations. And now we're getting to the point where the government doesn't have to do anything to the big corporations, because they are the big corporations. You know, now, because of the issues with financing and with the amount of money that people need to get elected oftentimes, and they have to go back to the same corporations, the government, there's a fuzzy line. You know, I used to teach a little bit about, if not a little bit, about, I used to teach a course on organized crime, and when we talked about Russian crime, one of the things that I would talk about was the fact that in Russia, business, politics, and crime, there's no real division.
Right.
The Russian people see this all as one, so they're not really surprised when they see the mixture of the – I mean, they don't even freak out when they see the mixture. They see it as normal. Well, it's getting to the point, definitely in America, that politics and business has become really a blurred line. And, you know,
that's the way it was a little over 100 years ago, in the 1890s, in the first so-called progressive era.
Right.
The first Americans to rise up and fight against this, 1880s, 1890s, you find the railroads all across the country,
the big
oil barons.
Yep.
The unions began at that time. There weren't any. And so
they were getting beaten and killed.
That's exactly right. Pullman,
you know,
Porter strike.
Yep.
So we've been down this road before. These are battles that most Americans learn about in history books and think we've long won. Mm-hmm. And now we have to fight them all over again. And it's interesting, because there's a case before the Supreme Court about whether or not President Obama can appoint people during
recess. Labor Relations Board,
And the fight was over the National Labor Relations Board. And it's very important for people to understand, because while they're calling Obama a dictator and all kinds of nonsense, the reason why he had to appoint during the Senate recess is not because the Republicans in the Senate didn't like his candidates for the National Labor Relations Board. That wasn't the issue. The Republicans announced, we do not want the NLRB to function whatsoever.
Right.
We don't care who you appoint. We want to make sure they don't have enough people on the board, because we don't believe that working people have a right to join together in unions and fight for higher wages. We think that the more you push working people down, the more you make them have the minimum wage, which we don't want to raise, the more you make them suffer, that's more money for our corporate profits, and they're the ones who funnel our campaign. So it's because Republicans hate working people and don't even want them to have a semi-equal chance. I mean, a union still doesn't have the power a corporation does, but at least it has more power than the individual workers. It's because Republicans hate working class people and do not want them to succeed, it's because they don't believe in the American dream, that they shut down the NLRB and forced President Obama to do these recess appointments. It's very important, because you don't want people to think, well, they just disagreed with the nominees. And if you disagree with the nominees, that's advice and consent, and that's in the Constitution, and I'm fine with that. That wasn't the case. They were trying to shut down basically the hard-fought powers that we won 125 years ago in the first strikes, in the beginning of unions at the turn of the century, America.
Yeah, and the National Labor Relations Board, they are the arm of the government. They're kind of there are labor laws. There are labor laws, and they are kind of the arbiter, the enforcement arm, the administrator. The unions can go to them and say, hey, this is going on, and they can look at the laws and say that's a violation of the laws. Or the NLRB can simply look at something that's going on in an industry on their own and say, hey, that's a violation of labor law, of labor laws, and then they can go in and they can take it to court on their own.
Or if the workers are trying to organize, they want to form a union, and suddenly the employer fires all the people who tried to join the union. That's illegal, but if you know the NLRB, it's unenforceable.
Yeah, right.
And so the Republicans are basically saying, you know, we do not want working class people to have a say in their own salaries.
Right.
We think that the corporation should be able to dictate all of that, and if you don't like it, well, be unemployed, but then we won't give you unemployment insurance.
And what it really is this. With the right, with the conservatives, it really is this, with the modern day Republican Party. It's when we have all the power, we're in charge. When we don't have any power, we're still in charge.
Yeah.
Because they are doing this is a they're dictating politically what happens. Because we can use the process to hold up nominees, we're not doing that for anything. We're not using that to address the issue of the nominees. We're using that as a political tactic to stop laws that we don't like, to stop even though they're on the books.
And that's something that Democrats never did. It's really important for people to understand. Democrats did filibuster some Bush nominees because they felt they were racist, because they felt they were sexist.
Yeah,
because
go
they,
back to Bork
they,
and all
they
that
had said
stuff, yeah.
some very extreme, awful things. What Democrats did was use the Senate's advise and consent power under the Constitution to say these particular nominees that you want to appoint George Bush are outside the mainstream. I have no problem with the Senate using advise and consent power like
right.
that. That's designed. That's according to the Constitution. But when you have a party that says, I don't want the government to function,
right.
it's the same as shutting the government down. I refuse to let the government function. That's why President Obama had to appoint those nominees.
Right. It's using your administrative powers, these administrative details to rule.
That's right.
To run the government.
That's
it's,
right.
it's the difference. And I always said it's the difference between governing. The right in our country doesn't believe in governance. They don't want to govern.
Right.
They want to rule. There's a difference.
Want their corporations.
Because when you govern, you have compromise. When you govern, you have to come up. You have to give a little. You got to take a little. Whatever the case may be. Oftentimes, you know, our side gives more than we're happy with. But there has to be some compromise in order to govern. The right doesn't want to govern. They want to rule. They want to say no matter what, our way is the only way, and we're going to use of course, the old words, by any means necessary, we will rule this country. And so they want to effectively wipe out the national labor laws, wipe out the unions, simply by using their ability. You know, as I always say, by declaring a 41-seat majority in the Senate.
Right.
So we're talking about, once again, WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C., Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. And I'm sure you want to talk about income inequality. I'm sure you think somebody out there might have something to say about income inequality.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the American dream, which I see is slipping away in America. You know, it used to be 40, 50 years ago, I mean, GI Bill, people came home and the government provided for their education. When my dad went to college, he could make enough by working a summer job and working all during the year to pay for half of his college.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can do that much anymore. I think kids go to school and they graduate and they have all these massive loans and they got to go back and live with their parents. And that isn't the way the American dream used to be. We've got retirees and the Republicans are cutting their pensions. Corporations are cutting pensions in the private sector. In the public sector, you've got military pensions that are being cut. You've got government workers that aren't being able to earn decent pay because of the sequester and furlough. So every step, every way, and then the only thing that retirees have left is Social Security, and they want to cut that too. They want to cut cost of living adjustments. So we used to have an American dream. We used to have a way that even if you were poor, through education, through hard work, through things like subsidized student loans, you could achieve something in America. Now, we don't even have subsidized student loans anymore. The government makes a profit on student loans.
Yep.
It's the exact opposite. Students are subsidizing corporations rather than having the government subsidize students.
Let me give the number. We're talking about income inequality here on News Views. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. 800-878-0893. And if you want to email, I got my email up here, you can email me. It's garlandin@gmail.com. My first name, Garland, and then the first letter of my last name, in. garlandin@gmail.com. Email, if you don't can't call in and you want to send an email, I'll read it. Put your name on there. If you just let me know, I will read your name on the air. We'll talk about your email.
Yeah, if you want to use Twitter, send me a tweet to Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk, and I'll be happy to read some of your tweets on the air. And
so it's at Mark Levine Talk.
At Mark Levine Talk.
GarlandIn@gmail.com. At Garland Nixon is my Twitter, but I don't have that up right now. So GarlandIn@gmail.com. So we're talking about income inequality. I just want your thoughts on it. It can be, this is news views. I certainly want to hear your views. You could talk about some of the things that we have talked about, or you can give us your own thought, your
one
own
more sense. Thing about income inequality that's important to note. So worker productivity has gone up at a steady pace all the time from Henry Ford and his first Model Ts. We can make a lot more cars faster now. Workers are working harder, and every year productivity increases 3%, 4%, 5%. From the 20s all the way through to the 70s, when worker productivity went up, as it did almost every year, everybody did better. The workers got a nice raise. Their bosses got a nice raise. The shareholders did well.
Everybody
up and down the line, from the richest CEO of the corporation down to the person on the assembly line. Since Reagan's time, since the 1980s, we've seen basically a break between the increase in productivity and the increase in wages.
Yep.
And now, ever since George Bush Jr. has been president, productivity continues to skyrocket, but all of that, virtually every penny of that productivity, goes to the bosses. And no matter how hard the worker works, even if they make twice as many products as they did 4 years ago, that advantage, that profit, doesn't go to the worker anymore. It all goes to the people at the top.
Well, you know, I used to go to the unmentionable place, Walmart, which I do not go. I used to go there. I was a sick and twisted man.
But I
used to go to Walmart. And, you know, I noticed when I first started going, you know, way back when, that, you know, you could go in there and there were people walking around with the little blue smiley faces everywhere. You walk over, you're looking for irons, you stumble into somebody. Where are irons? They walk, oh, I'll show you. What? Okay. But I began to notice that you could never find anybody. Can't find anybody. You know, of course, I don't go at all now. And I was reading a story a while back that what Walmart did, they opened more stores and had less employees. And they had more stores than they – way more stores before and way less employees than they had with the fewer stores.
Yeah.
So now they've got way more – these gigantic super centers, but they have less people. So the people – the few people that are there, number one, they're running all over the place, working themselves to death.
Right.
And they have a really high turnover.
Right.
So the people that are there don't have no, you know, they don't know much more than you. So you go in there now and you get poor service.
Yeah, of course.
You can't find anything. The employees are getting the shaft. I'm not going to find that out because I don't even go in there anymore. I'm going to go somewhere like Costco.
I've been in a Walmart.
Yeah.
I can't think of it. But go to Costco. I love Costco. Yep. And they treat their workers right. And actually, President Obama mentioned Costco in his State of the Union
speech. He was there the other day. So yeah. I don't go to Walmart, and I don't go to Scams Club.
All right.
Forget Scams Club. They'll never see me. So we've got a couple people on the line. We're going to take one caller. We only got a minute or so, and then we're going to go to break. We got Tesfa. Tesfa, welcome to WPFW.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening, Tesfa.
Do you know what's worse?
What's that?
The American economic system, what you were talking about, is trickling down to the third world. And in Ethiopia, about like 10 to 15 people own the whole country. With add to that, Alamuddi, a Saudi guy, between the two groups, the whole economy is controlled. And the antitrust laws in the United States is being diluted. And these big corporations control the politics of the United States through control of Congress, through their lobbyists. How is it different from a command economy where the Communist Party top officials control the whole economy and the whole politics?
Yeah, it's a corporateocracy.
Yeah, it's funny that they always yell socialism, socialism, socialism. And if you look at the true, which oftentimes what they call socialism is state capitalism. But if you look at what happens with what happened in the Soviet Union with the party that controlled everything, that, you know, this is kind of we're going to take a break. 202-588-0893.
And it does bleed over to the third world. It does make
the third world
less free.
202-588-0893. We're talking income inequality here on WPFW. Be right back in 1 minute. Good evening. Welcome back to News Views. Garland Nixon here with
Mark Levine.
And we're talking income inequality. We've got plenty. We got lots of people there on the line. We've got lots to talk about, I'm sure. You know, one thing I like about WPFW, I've always liked about PFW, is that we get some brilliant callers.
We do. We get so some informed, very insightful comments.
Yeah.
Not always. Yes. But usually.
Yes. One person did call me a white supremacist, which
that,
is kind of
I do remember that.
Because I'm black, but that other than that, yeah. You know, and even that, hey, that was, you know.
Maybe your Uncle Tom.
Yeah, that's know? It. I don't know, but whatever the case was, that guy had a, he was a, look, I'll give him this. He was listening to WPFW, so he can't be all bad. All right. Next, we're going to Ramey. Ramey, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Hey there. Welcome.
Garland, how's it going? I helped break the story. I called Garland a couple of hours ago. Brought up the news about Chris Christie, but I just had two quick items. I just wanted to respond to Mark's comment earlier that nothing could really be done with Christie. Those aren't your exact words. I think the Interstate Commerce Commission can bring a charge against the state.
Huh.
You know.
By the way, I'm not saying he couldn't be impeached and removed from office. The question is whether criminal charges would stick and he could actually end up in prison.
In New York, that would be how about if New York could charge him with a crime?
I think that I haven't seen yet, but I do think that there's a lot of smoke, there's a lot of fire, and I don't think he has any shot of winning in 2016 in the Republican presidential nomination. But you know, listen, we'll see. I don't know all the facts, Eric. It's quite possible that stuff comes out that I don't know. That
he certainly wouldn't be the crookedest Republican on the ballot.
I mentioned this other thing quickly in terms of the economy.
Yeah,
I'm a former Republican. I mean, I can't.
No way.
Oh, I left the party back in 68.
This is true confessions. Right? Oh, in 68. Okay. You can be a Republican in 68.
I left the party in 68.
That's fine. That's fine.
This is the thing. I mean, in terms of the economic policies right now, I think the Democrats have totally missed the boat on this minimum wage thing. What they need to do, this is what should be done. They should eliminate income taxes, federal income taxes, for lower-income people. That would solve the problem. That would take care of it.
Well, if you make under a certain amount now, you don't have to pay income taxes.
Yeah,
right?
But I mean, they should raise the
state. Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, there's something that sort of does that is earn income tax credit. I mean, that's in essence what that does. It's sort of like a negative income tax.
But you know what? That's one thing to think about. Okay, so that kind of now, to some extent, it kind of moves the burden. It's still the things are being paid for and other taxpayers are paying for them, as opposed to making a corporation share some of their money.
That's a good point, right?
Microsoft or whoever, they're saying, sure, lower the tax, whatever. We're not paying any, you know, paying any taxes anyway.
That lowers what's available to the government to spend on things like infrastructure or social
from all the other people that are
education
paying.
Education or other things. Whereas corporations are sitting on more cash.
Yep.
By far, than at any time in all of world history.
Yep.
They've got trillions of dollars unspent. I don't mean trillions of dollars that they're investing in new factories or new products or R&D. No. I mean just sitting there in the vault, in the bank, and they got nothing to do with it.
They want more, Mark.
Well, they do want more.
The problem is,
they're now pushing Congress to actually give them a tax holiday so they can bring it home and give it to their shareholders.
I got a couple trillion dollars sitting there. What do you want?
Nothing.
I want another couple trillion. Why?
So,
I don't know.
Imagine if they paid all their workers a minimum wage. That would be a direct transfer of wealth from this money sitting there in the bank doing nothing. Again, not going to R&D, not even going to advertising, just sitting there to workers who could use it to spend on food or shelter or transportation or education or whatever, or healthcare, whatever they could use it for, that would go in the economy. That would absolutely stimulate the economy, and it wouldn't cost the government a penny. So while I understand Eric's point, that would cost the government money, whereas minimum wage does not cost the government.
That's it. They are paying.
And actually, it would actually lessen our welfare payments, because if we paid a decent minimum wage, then the government wouldn't have to pay when people are working at Walmart at a minimum wage. They wouldn't need food stamps so much.
Right.
They wouldn't need disability and unemployment.
You know, I think if I'm not mistaken, is it Montgomery County might have just done something with. We need to talk to them. I think they just raised the minimum wage to like $10 an hour in Maryland.
Well, and good for President Obama, by the way, for announcing that government contractors have to pay their workers at least $10.
Yeah,
that's going to be important, particularly in our area.
I got to get someone on from Montgomery County, Maryland, because I'm pretty sure they did that, and I think Maryland's talking about raising it. So
California's going up to $10 in 2016. I know that.
You know, it's funny. The we go back to our callers. We've got a bunch of them. We'll go to Minerva next. But I just want to say this. You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier, I think I was talking to you or someone else earlier, and that is when you look at the 10 poorest states in America, 10 of the 10 poorest states are red states.
Yep.
When you look at the wealthiest states, 9 of the 10 wealthiest states are blue states. When you look at education, 9 of the 10 least educated states are red states. 9 of the 10 best educated states are blue states. When you look at health, same exact thing. 9 of the 10, now I'm sure the same 9, you look, the same 9 that are poor, they're also uneducated and are also unhealthy. But you see that over and over again. When you look at food stamps, 7 of the 10 states that have the highest percentage of their citizens on food stamps, 7 of the 10 are red states.
And I'll tell you something else that relates to that. Because the blue states are generally richer than the red states, the way our country works, because we're 50 states and we do help each other out, is that the people in New York, in New Jersey, in Massachusetts, in the wealthy blue states, mm-hmm. actually pay more in taxes than they get back, whereas people in Mississippi
Alabama,
and Texas,
Louisiana,
they get more back from the government. So already the blue states subsidize the red states, and it's ironic because it's the red state people that complain about redistribution of wealth,
and they're the ones that are getting it,
while the liberals who believe in redistribution of wealth are actually giving it out. If anyone should complain, it would be us liberals.
And they also tell us that the way to prosperity is through their policies. Through their policies,
yeah.
Your states are the poorest, least educated, least healthy, with the most people on food stamps, and you're telling us that the way to prosperity is to follow your policies.
That does make sense because the 3 rich people in Texas, Garland, do very well.
Yeah,
rich people in Texas have great big homes. They have perfect health care. They've got all the golden toilet seats they need.
Yeah, the other 30 million are
right. Yeah, right. Yeah, well, yeah, but you know, those are the rest of Texas.
Okay, we got a bunch of callers, so let's start getting them in. Let's start with Minerva. Sorry about keeping you there so long. Welcome, patient Minerva.
Hi, Minerva.
Hi, guys. How are you doing this evening?
We're good.
Fantastic.
Good. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I wish that you would, and I'm going to listen to you every week, and I wish you'd talk more about the fact that when we talk about, and I'm going to go to the Democratic Party, which I'm a part of, but I always feel like as Democrats, they come just before election and begin to cause a frenzy about people not going to be able to vote in these type issues. Whereas with the Republicans, they're constantly, the day after an election, they're beginning to plan what's going to be their step for the next election. And I'm wondering why the Democrats don't do that.
It's a good point. The Democrats absolutely need to work every day, 24/7, to make sure people have the right to vote. And the Republicans are working very hard to take that away in state after state after state, to make it harder for the elderly to vote, harder for students to vote, harder for minorities to vote.
Harder for people that don't vote for them.
Well,
you know,
right.
What I always say is this, if your policies are unpopular, the fewer people that vote, the better. If your policies are popular, you want everybody to vote. Thank you very much, Minerva. Next, we're going to go to Hamid. Hamid? Hamid, I certainly hear in the background.
Yeah, turn down your radio, Hamid, please.
Which means you have to turn down your radio
and then speak.
We have Hamid, I think.
Hello.
Hamid,
Hello,
turn
welcome.
Your radio down.
Turn your radio down, sir.
We're getting confused.
Okay, how's that? Better?
Better.
Better.
Go ahead.
What's
All
happening?
Right. Yeah, this is a really interesting conversation you guys have going. And through the duration, I had so many ideas pop up. So let me just pick one or two. I think really what's happening is we need a conscientious movement to educate the public as consumers, because a lot of times these corporations that engage in these very oppressive policies against the public, they're being funded by our own money. We're the ones that are funding them, going to Walmart, mm-hmm. you know. They have this big stockpile of cash. I remember I'd watch these science fiction movies, you know, and you'd get the big evil corporation, and they'd have this big R&D budget with all these evil toys and stuff, and the public would be all frightened, and, you know, say, oh, they're so powerful, they have so much money. Then I'd think about it, I'd say, wait a minute, they don't have any money, that's our money.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Every time
Good
you go
point.
There and you buy stuff from them, you know, they're just using our funds against us, and
that's
we're
it.
All shaking in the corner, eating ice cream,
Good
you know?
Point.
And Gaughan and I are very clear to remind the public about the corporations that don't mistreat their workers, because they don't all mistreat their workers. Costco is famous for paying their workers a good salary. But absolutely right. We fund the enemy. Hamid is absolutely right. And the more that we boycott places that like don't treat their workers right, like Walmart.
Yeah, and Scams Club. Their sister company. But yeah, in fact, because I know Mark and I, we did a show one day and we talked about Walmart and said, you know, if you're a progressive and you're going to Walmart, you know, you're kicking yourself in the teeth if you're going to places. I don't go there, but if you go to these places and you're a progressive and, you know, one out of one side of your mouth, you're saying, oh, this is terrible the way they're doing their workers, and then you're paying them to do that. And meanwhile, you got six people that are worth $120 billion, but yet they will not share one penny with the people, you know, they're the people that are cooking the pie,
right, making their wealth,
get nothing, and they eat the whole pie. Next, we're going to Stella. Stella, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Stella.
I wanted to take Mark Levine up on something.
Sure.
I have to say that I think you're sincerely compassionate in many ways, but I think that you have a bit of a blind spot to put it mildly, when it comes to what the Israelis do to their citizenry. And it's an ongoing problem. It's key, you know, our relationship with Israel.
Well, I understand what you're saying, I'm not going to stop you because for any other reason than this, and that is when we have a particular topic, we try to stay on the topic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We talked about Kristallnacht only from the perspective of...
Oh, I thought you said we were calling in about anything today.
No, I said we're talking about inequality, and whatever you wanted to talk about inequality, that's fine.
Well,
and when we talk about the Middle East, that's fine, but otherwise...
I'll tell you what, Stella, do me a favor.
Is this not relevant to inequality, though? I mean, could I...
Well, we're really stretching it. And then let me tell you, let me be square with you. If I do this, the next thing you know, the callers are all, and Mark's over there laughing, they'll all be about 9/11. As soon as you start straying away, next thing you know,
I can't go to building seven
today.
You can communicate with me on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk, and I'll be happy to discuss with you any topic.
But I want the listeners to hear what I have to say and hear your response.
We deal with the Middle East at other times. Yeah. We've done several shows on the Middle East. I'm sure we will.
So,
again.
But we'd be happy to hear you talk about inequality. Do you have anything about inequality? Because I don't want to just brush you off, because you're very important to us.
In terms of inequality, I am disturbed about the fact that these changes that have been announced in programming here.
Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate it. I tried, Mark. We love her and we want her to talk, but. Yeah, as you know, as soon as we go to Israel and changes, it's building seven, buddy. The next caller, telling you.
Right, or even the policies of WPFW. That's just not what the show is about.
No, this is
not a free-for-all.
And it's not fair.
And there are other shows that deal with that at WPFW.
And it's not fair to people who call in to talk about inequality.
Right, so let's stick to the topic. But feel free, by the way, to email or Facebook us about other issues, and we'll respond.
Yeah. We try to stay on point. Bill, welcome to WPFW, Bill.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen.
Hi, Bill.
Another alum of the Raucous.
Bill!
Yes, Bill came.
It's Bad Bill, gentlemen.
He came and saw us at Ben's Next Door very frequently. You're probably our most frequent visitor.
All right. A couple of things. And here's something scary to think about: inequality. The healthiest economy in the so-called developed/Western world is Germany. They have the most extensive social safety net of any country in the so-called developed Western world. Now, this one scary aspect of this, while I can think of the people who fund and control the other side of the political spectrum are evil, they are not stupid. And this is frightening, because if they are not stupid, the only possible conclusion, conclusion that we must inevitably infer, is that they actually are in some way, shape, or form or manner more concerned with their own wealth, which they no longer need any more of, than the actual health and welfare of the country.
I think for them it's about keeping score. I really do. I think there are certain wealthy people, and not all wealthy people are evil or wrong. You look at people like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates. Oh, I know you're not saying that, Bill, and I'm not saying you are. My point is that for them, they understand their wealth is a way to actually help others and to use their wealth to help others. There are other people for whom wealth is just keeping score. I mean, the Walton family, I presume, is just trying to rack up the dollars because they're not spending it on themselves, because once you have $1 billion, what's another $100 billion going to do? I mean, you already have the fanciest house in America and 12 yachts or whatever you got. An extra billion won't do you any good. So God knows it's not helping them any.
Right.
Let me end with a question, gentlemen, for anybody who's chiming in later. How does it come to pass that in the bluest, well, what used to be the bluest jurisdiction in the country, which is Washington, D.C., to whatever extent we can participate in the nation's politics, things have gotten to the point where the mayor felt sufficiently desperate that he had to invite Walmart into which literally means that the people of the district are, and some of us are, unfortunately, in those straits, are in a situation where they are so desperate that they are actually put in a position of funding the enemy.
I don't think this is much that. Oh, thanks a lot, Bill. I don't think this is much that. I think it's that Walmart has so much money and power, you can't keep them out.
I don't know. I think that, remember, the city council had a majority vote to keep them out. They didn't have enough to overrule the mayor's veto.
Yeah, the mayor vetoed it.
But at the end of the day, I think that Mayor Gray should have to face the voters for his decision, and he's running again, and he's way ahead because I guess he's got lots of money because I guess corporations can help him out. But if you don't like what Mayor Gray did, then don't vote for the guy.
Yeah, that's the long and short.
I mean,
Next, we're going to Shanta. I hope that's Shantae.
Shantae. Yeah.
Hi, Shantae.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment is just about the tuition, like the inequality of tuition.
Yeah.
Like you said, big government is making the most money off of tuition.
That's true.
You know, I've racked up for the last 4 years $56,000, okay? Mm. And I still can't find a decent job.
Wow.
And that really saddens me, because I've always seen education as the great leveler. Education is the reason why, you know, a poor guy from a single mother named Bill Clinton and a poor guy from a single mother named Barack Obama could both become president of the United States. They did it through education. That was the ticket, the American dream ticket out of poverty. And it used to be that we subsidized education through state universities, through the GI Bill. I mean, student loans used to be subsidized by the government. The government would actually pay so that you had below market rates. Today, the caller is absolutely right. What happens is students subsidize the government.
Yeah.
The government makes a profit off of student loans.
Absurd.
We shouldn't call them subsidized. They're not subsidized. The only subsidy is going from students to the government. The caller is absolutely right, and that's something that I think I'd like to see Democrats really stand firm on that issue, because I don't think people who aren't students necessarily realize that the days of student loan subsidies are gone. And that students are actually making profit for the government. I don't know that everyone realizes
not to mention
that. And we don't talk about that enough. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
The cost of tuition has gone up unbelievably over the last 10, 15 years.
That's right.
So not only do they have to pay to get the loans, the amount of money. I mean, I know people are paying $1,000 a month. People come out $100,000, $200,000, $300,000.
Right.
I mean, a house, basically. And they've got to pay this off. You've got some people that may be paying almost the rest of their lives for it's absurd.
No, that's what we need: more scholarships. We need more state universities. We need more subsidies. Education. You know, we tell people study hard, stay in school. You know, don't commit crimes, work hard, and you can achieve something in life. And then we don't tell them the backstory, which is they're going to be saddled with debt.
And you can't if you live in Europe.
The answer is it never used to be that way in America.
Oh, what is it?
And that is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the American dream slipping away.
I'm reading the other day, I think it's the Netherlands. I'm not sure it's the Netherlands. There is a country that anyone, even if you're from another country, if you go to their, if you come to their country, you can go to school. They don't charge anyone under any.
I believe that should be in America. I think
no question.
If you are good enough and you work hard and you do good enough stuff in school to get into a nice university. I don't understand why we pay for public school, but we don't pay for university when that is necessary to do well in America.
We should drastically expand community colleges, and people shouldn't have to pay, just like high school. We got two more callers. Let's get them real quick. We got George. George, welcome to WPFW.
Hey, it's George.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hey, how you doing, bud?
Hey there.
Listen, I listened to your caller earlier. He kind of hit the nail on the head as far as the boycott goes, because what we do is we spend a lot of money supporting these. They're saying the gap is widening, but we're contributing to that by buying all their products.
Yep.
If you looked at what happened in Montgomery during Martin Luther King's time, boycott, how they were able, it took some sacrifice, but they were able to come together and shut the bus company down.
That's right.
And I looked at a documentary the other day, well, a while back, where these Latinos went to, I think it was somewhere in Georgia, a community in Georgia or South Carolina. And they were able to do, in 13 years, what the residents, mostly minorities, African-American minorities in that community, weren't able to do in 13 decades.
Right.
And the residents got upset about that because they was more or less they got envious or hateful. But the minister, the African-American minister in that town, he said, "Now, wait a minute. Let's try to see how they did that."
Right.
I mean, here we've been here for over 100 years, and they've come in 13 years. They got stores and businesses, and they were thriving. But there's certain things we have to do. We got to stop staying up all night to buy these tennis shoes for $200 or $300, and all these iPhones and all this stuff they're coming out with, and killing you, and your youth are out here killing yourself.
All right. Thank you very much. I hate to cut you off. We got one more caller, and I do want to get to our last caller before we go.
Just real quick, patronize small business. George is absolutely right.
Right.
Go ahead.
Anita, welcome to WPFW. You're our last caller for the night.
Yes. I have a question. Do you think that this inequality is coming out of the root of slavery? Because it was always taught to the majority of the whites that people of color and Native Americans was not included. And that was steeped in their religious belief, which is the Calvinist teaching and the Arians teaching. And these are the people that continually to oppress not only the people here in America, but around the globe. And maybe people need to start looking at the connection between religion and government.
Thank you very much, and you're our last caller for the night. You know, that which brings me to something. Next week is the pledge drive.
Right.
And we will be offering as a premium, you're going to love this, it's by Professor John Bracey. It's called a DVD, and it's great. I've watched it. It's called How Racism Harms White Americans.
And there's no question that it does.
You know, a great example, during when FDR was president, in order to get Social Security passed, they had to exempt domestic and farm workers, because a lot of the white Southerners felt that's where black people work, and blacks and Latinos work, and so if you do that, they won't be able to get it. So out of racism, they had to exempt farm workers. But guess what? But in America, an overwhelming percentage of the farm workers were white. So to stop a few blacks from getting it out of their own racism, they cut the throats of the majority of the farmers. If you think about it, go to Kansas, Iowa, blah, blah, blah. There wasn't black.
Or even during the Civil War, the fact that most of the white Southerners that fought for the South didn't even own slaves.
No.
They were fighting for rich people's right to oppress black people.
So racism is always right. And so next week, call in. I'm going to have How Racism Harms White Americans. It's a DVD that you will love by Dr. John H. Bracey. It's going to be great. Mark. If somebody want to get in touch with you, how would they go about it?
Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. My website is MarkLevineTalk.com. You can also send me a message on Facebook at Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. And on my website or my Twitter, you can talk about anything. No restrictions.
All right. With me, I'm at Garland Nixon on Twitter. Follow me. Facebook me. It's Garland Nixon. It's G-A-R-L-A-N-D. N-I-X-O-N, Garland Nixon, Facebook. Love that. I'm always on Facebook, getting stuff on my phone and answering. And
don't forget, Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
6 to 8 a.m.
Mark will be there.
Mark Levine. I got my own new show on WPFW, and I'd love to have you call in. And we don't even have a name for it yet, I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
Yes, and feel free to email me if you have any questions or comments or want to talk after the show. It's garlandin@gmail.com. Email me anytime. And Bill Witherspoon's over there with his fingers on the buttons, getting ready to, I think he's giving us the high sign or
next
the low
up
sign,
it's saying Robin's
we got to
get
out of here. Yes, and that's really, really good music. So stay tuned to WPFW. You got good music coming up in a very few short minutes. So please do not change that dial. Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, News Views, Friday, 6 to 7 p.m.